Hello, welcome to another episode of Through the Turnstiles podcast. We are but two this evening. It's me, Muzz, Self, and I. Muzz, how are you?
I like that. Have you pre-prepared that?
No, that's just come to me in the moment.
Tremendous. I'm all the better for that banter there.
It has been ideal. Missing Andy, obviously. He's otherwise engaged, but if you really want to have a little look at him, you can have a watch of our recent interview we did, which should be out today as well, with Blair Alston. Muzz, how do you think that one went?
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Great to get another bit of insight from a lower league player. And it was good, interesting to look back in his, obviously he's had a lot of career moments at a higher level as well. So, and I liked the detail he went into in his best 11. That was a good one.
Aye, class that he didn't include himself as well, which was a good shout. But strange as well for being a relatively one club man, but he had plenty of scope to his answers. Like, there's plenty to speak about. It's not just Falkirk. So, aye, brilliant
interview.
We are on YouTube, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, through the Turnstiles, where we always are. You can check our back catalogue on these platforms also, and we are out on a Thursday at 12 o'clock. So if you're watching us then, that'd be ideal. If not, obviously go back and you can check that interview with Blair. You can check the interview we did the week before with Greg, and there's plenty going back into Beyond. We are going to cover a couple of things this week, just a championship focus mainly, but a couple of issues in terms of Leagues 1 and League 2 coming back, and we'll touch on the departure of Mark Kerr before we talk about any games, but the return of the journeyman spot of the week.
Certainly. It's a sort of double spot this week. The Scarf, an Inverness Caledonian Thistle fan, tells us that he used to see the Shinney brothers quite regularly in Asda in Inverness. It must have been 2012, 2013, as Andrew left for Birmingham that summer. He adds that they were buying an unholy amount of apples on one particular occasion. So I don't know if it was just apples, but the Shinnies are into apples, so I mean, you can just end it now.
I tune in for that and nothing more, but an unholy amount of apples, that's I wonder what the criteria is, because how many can, I was going to say one man eat, but how many can two men eat?
Two brothers as well, yeah.
Quantify unholy, because that's large and just a large amount. Yeah, that's perfectly as mundane as possible. I've seen two footballers in the shopping, and that is what we like. Plenty more in the forbidden realm that we're no longer allowed to access.
Aye, we're running. Well, we've got a few weeks left. But always welcome if we can get some more in, because obviously difficult during COVID, unless they've been basically flouting regulations. It'll have been a lot tougher to spot these journeymen, but
I don't want us to turn into some sort of police tip line where we're three footballers playing in the park together.
We're throwing them under the bus left, right, and centre. We're not little snitches.
But anyone who has spotted the journeyman can comment on that. I forget the name of that forum. It's something to do with snacks at half time at a football game. It escapes me just now, but certainly there seems to be technical issues on our side. They seem to be fine. It's just us that's struggling a wee bit, but.
Well, are they fine? Because they haven't fucking told us about it. So anyway, that's another. We'll not get into that.
Yeah, so spotties, journeyman spotties can still post there, or also at Turnstiles there can get us on Twitter, comment on YouTube, and that. We're always keen for a wee read. And if you do spot anyone and they would be interested in speaking to us, then we're all ears. How does it feel to be spotted, for example? First order of business, though, Muzz, I think we should touch briefly on League One and Two before we sort of put a peg in it and then get on to the Championship. Monday, that news came out that it was just going to be suspended, same old, same old. And then all of a sudden on Tuesday, we're told we're back.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a funny one. It's to me, it's from a complete outside point of view, it looks like the government maybe buckling a wee bit to pressure and trying to rush up a solution when they could have done themselves a lot more justice by just being clear from the start. or at least given the go ahead from the start. I mean, I don't know what difference 24 hours makes. Why the need for that? So they've obviously gone away and managed to rustle something up quickly. But a lot of people saying, you know, is it still good enough? There's still a bit of ambiguity there about how it's all going to happen. But I think the main thing is that there's the ball rolling again towards.
That's very good. That get the ball rolling.
I never realised that. Yeah, I didn't mean that. But towards action again. And I think the next big decision comes how they finish the season. Be it a shortened version, do they try and squeeze in all the rest of the games? Do they stop it altogether? That's still getting talked about. And last I heard that there's having recently had all the clubs united making a decision about being prepared to play on and test. There's rumblings that some clubs might now start to have differing views about calling the season early. I don't know what you think yourself.
Yeah, I'm torn because half of me thinks I want to agree with Craig Levein, which is a rare occurrence for various reasons. But he's out there saying that no one's really thinking about the players because it's a rapid turnaround, especially if you're talking about part-time clubs. There was rumour to the fact that the first games would be played on like the 13th of March or something, which gives you, you know, the day Thursday. If you can get like a booking sorted, presumably you've got a long-standing booking, but you need to get facilities up and running. Maybe you can train on the Saturday, again, facilities dependent. Then you're back training Tuesday, Thursday, and then it's a game straight away. Which is getting, to be fair, into the region of when Stuart Brown was saying, oh, we'd maybe need this many training sessions to get up to speed, but goes against a wee bit what Greg Spence had said in our talk with him when he was like, actually, it's going to take you a long time to get up to speed, because he felt he didn't actually play full pace football until after he'd got some friendlies under his belt, because he's saying you can run as much as you want and presumably some of these players will be on furlough or they'll still be getting paid, but they'll still be out training. Mm-hmm. But will they be able to sustain that high pressure football? So maybe we're going to come back and it'll be detrimental for some teams because they're not able to play at their full capacity. So they're dropping points or they're letting other teams pick up points that they maybe wouldn't have, or we're going to see more injuries. And I don't know what you think, but certainly the games I've seen, whether it's live or whether it's on a stream or whatever on TV, I feel like this five subs rule is good for looking after players, but how often have you seen it be used more for tactical reasons? So you're seeing the subs board going up and you're thinking, oh, that player's dead on their feet, that player's knackered, they must be coming off. And actually they stay on and it's just a wee tinkering of shape or something. So, yeah, I'm not sure what you're thinking, like, in terms of players coming back in that.
I think, yeah, by all accounts, it's too short notice. I think they should definitely set a date to get underway again. But even if it's a month ahead, I still think I would be in favour of, if I had to call the shots, of playing out the full league, but for this season only, extending it into summer. Mm-hmm. That would be my choice. I think that would give you the best, the most fair, play out the full season like that would give you the most fair kind of idea of are the league positions that the teams lie in. The most deserved, and I just don't see why. I think they'll be able, as the weather gets better as well, they'll be able to get through the fixtures if they extend it into summer a wee bit. Okay, it'll shorten the pre-season a wee bit going into the next season, but they've had so much time anyway. I think that would provide also perfect momentum going into a new season, to be not too many weeks off the back of you know, match fitness. I think it's too much of a minefield. Now that there's almost no perfect solution to it, so I think something has to be settled on, obviously. But
I think that was Levine's suggestion, was partially like, well, we've just made an arse of it for the government and the footballing authorities, who usually have been towing the same line, to now, like you say, 24 hours difference. No, we're not playing now. We are playing. Don't know when we're back, but we do know the Scottish Cup's coming back this time or this date. some teams are now beginning to say, "Aye, let's get back." But I'd heard again other teams now being a bit more conscious of actually sitting down, having heard the announcement. If we do this maths, we need to test this many times at this cost. We probably can't afford to do that over the course of the season. So there is an argument, I suppose, where we've made an arse of it to the extent we have, let's just cancel it. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time in my head, like you're saying, just give us another pre-season, almost. Give us another couple of weeks and then start playing out from then on and go into summer because, you know, those players are under contract anyway. There's, I'd imagine, not many players coming from the lower leagues to go into any sort of summer football, international competitions. The only concern there, though, is if you're a team that's getting relegated from the Championship in the playoffs, are you just sitting on your hands for X amount of weeks, months until the playoffs in League One are sorted? So it's just mental, basically.
It's almost back to the same scenarios as last year. I wouldn't like to be the person who has to call it, but yeah, that's how I would see it. Try and, for an interest of sporting integrity, after the kind of mess last season, try their best to at least play out the season. Then teams are going to be more accepting of where they lie at the end of the season because they've given it their best crack. But the financial side of things, it's my understanding as well that clubs had come forward to say that they were prepared, they were planned for testing. So I think part of that was going to be funded by the grants.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bit of ambiguity as to how much of that money was going to be available and when, but I think they should ideally try and get on with it. And I don't know if eventually players can be, I know there's a lot more important things in the world than football, but if players can be vaccinated, that would be, but that's going to be way in the future, or not way in the future, but there's going to be doctors and nurses before League One and Two jobbers are going to get
and some would argue justifiably, but who are we? I agree. I think as long as they keep the momentum of getting all 20 clubs on board, who were all pulling in the same direction, who were all saying things like, "Aye, we will spend some money on it," as long as they can still continue to get that sort of, it's not quite a feel-good feeling, it's a bit of unity in those 20 clubs, all going in the right direction, I think. Yeah, I'm hoping there's a positive one, but I think we'll get into the bones of this more next week, hopefully, if we find more out, but certainly in the weeks to come when we're still trying to work out when we're back and what we're actually doing. The only other piece of news that I'd picked up was Mark Kerr departing here.
I was at Aaron against Inverness Cali a couple of weeks ago, as I probably said last week, and it doesn't surprise me in a way that he's left, but I feel that it was a bit quicker than I expected. At the same time, I thought, you know, they actually looked like a beaten team against Inverness as well, so you could tell that maybe something was on the cards, and that game against Arbroath, that kind of, because of the position they're in, that became a must win. It's almost a relegation end type six pointer, if you will. So I think when they've toiled at home again, failed to score against Arbroath, they've maybe said, you know, strike while the iron's hot, but we've still got a solid chance of staying up with Arbroath, so adrift, let's change it, let's try and get a bounce, somebody else come in, fresh ideas, because I don't think Mark Kerr's done a bad job, but since McCall left, they've just been on a steady decline, and I think that's obviously the board are trying to act to try and make sure that they don't keep plummeting, because there was no sign of them turning around.
No, there was a change of ownership a while back as well, so you wonder if things have maybe been a wee bit uneasy, but did you think that they had like a, I don't know, because half of me wants to say it's come out of nowhere, but I don't know if it has, but do you think there was any sort of like style that Air played, or do you think they did just look beaten like start to finish? Did they have, do you think they had a game plan that they were just failing to meet? Like, has Mark Kerr tried to put a stamp on it and they just haven't met that standard, or do you think it's just...
I can only comment on the one game I saw, but I found it hard to identify a particular style that they were trying to play. you know, they say sometimes teams maybe reflect like the kind of player the manager was, but that's, I don't know, I've just made that up. That's maybe not a thing, because
they do, you know, say that.
It's not always the case. You know, Jim Goodwin's a perfect example. But for you know, a midfielder who could still play, Mark Kerr, you know, there wasn't any particular possession-based style. It was basically get out wide to Walsh and McCowan and try and beat a man, get it in the box. But once that was snuffed out, there was no real creativity. There was no real togetherness from the team, no system. And there was a bit of question around the substitutions. And I think the fans were starting to say the same. There was a lot of questionable substitutions being made. Guys like Zanata being left out of the picture, you know, impact players. So I think they put a young right, the game I was at, you put a young right back on. His name escapes me, into midfield instead of bringing on maybe a more suitable player for that role and things like that. So there was things like that creeping in, bit of fan discontent as well. So I think he's an honest guy, and possibly could have turned it around with a bit more time, but these things seem to happen, you know.
You wonder if it's a bit of naivety about him just going in and doing the job, but it's not the easiest job to take, but it's also you would have thought a relatively accessible job. If you've been offered it, you're not going to turn it down because it's going to be too high pressure or it's going to be too difficult, because by all accounts it's a decent squad, a decent team, it was on the right trajectory. It was going to take an inevitable wobble when you change the manager at any time, but it's not like one of those, I don't know, the sleeping giant club you expect to come back up that the other teams in the division might have been. So,
yeah, exactly. A bit more of a challenge in that sense. Difficult as well, coming straight from a player, for that to be, when you sum up like you just have, it's almost a risk, isn't it, to come straight from a player into your first management job. It's a difficult gig, that, isn't it, because it's a club that have relative stature, but at the same time, you know, have spent recent seasons in League One. You know, do they necessarily, you know, are they entitled to stay in the Championship because they're Ayr United? Not necessarily. So it's I don't know. It's a difficult one. As I say, I'm not quite surprised, but because of the form they were on and the run they were on, but I didn't quite see it coming so quickly.
The big three favourites for the job: David Hopkins 6-4, Jim McIntyre 6-1, Ian Murray 8-1. No sign of Neil McCann on this list as of yet, who's done a stellar job at Inverness.
Yeah, he did a good job. Started well on Friday. Good point. Home to Hearts. He changed the team about a wee bit. I was quite surprised to see Allardyce come out, but I had to say Sean Welsh came in and had a really good game. It was good to see Miles Storey. That's what I've always thought Miles Storey should do more of, just getting in the channel, you know, bossing the defender and slotting it home like that. You know, I think that's what he should be doing more of his career. That's what he's got in his locker. And it was interesting to see, we were asking last week, where, you know, was Neil McCann going to stamp his style on the team suddenly? And I don't know if you noticed, and I don't know if I've seen Cali once this season in the flesh, but mostly in League One. But I've seen them in that Ayr game, and I don't remember playing from the back being an obvious tactic, but I noticed on the television against Hearts that they would be playing it out of the back, but the keeper would be playing it short, distributing it short, but then inevitably they would actually distribute it to either Devine or Dees, who would then like go to just lump it up the field anyway. So you can tell he said himself, McCann, that he's only spent a couple of days in the training pitch with him, but it's been quite intense. So he's maybe tried to quickly like fire a few points in like that, so the team haven't quite got used to it. But I thought it was a really good performance. I thought they probably maybe deserved to win that game on the face of it. Hearts got back into the second half, but the first half, Inverness were opening them up.
You wonder if it's maybe been one of those ones for Neil McCann, where he's like, if you can do one thing this game, it's going to be you play it out or you start playing in this way, and then after that we'll do something else next week, and then just try and, like you say, do what he thinks might be the small changes. But I was surprised to see, like you, Allardyce drop out. I thought Todorov dropping out as well was an interesting one, because it looked almost to be a wee bit of a change of shape, or I don't know, a change of system perhaps. But Todorov's an odd one, because he's not been overly consistent, but you just thought maybe they were getting into that sort of that mode now, and I could see Hearts just sort of whitewashing it with Allardyce and Todorov dropping out, but it's by no means been that.
Yeah, Todorov's been the main source of goals, really, and he played so well against Ayr. I was equally surprised to see him left out, but you can see why they maybe, against Hearts, they would maybe, I mean, they were 4-4-2 against Ayr, pretty much, so you can see why against Hearts they've maybe taken one man off the front and put another man in midfield to try and match them, because ultimately not getting beat is your target against Hearts, really, for anyone else in this league. So, but yeah, Sutherland played well as well, but I would have thought Todorov would have stayed as there as a holding kind of target man. But Halliday making the cut again for the Hearts team. What's your thoughts on that? We talked about it last week, I suppose, but
just another game for
you. Didn't change our minds.
It just ran about a wee bit and passed the ball sideways, backwards, and sometimes tried to pass it forward to limited success. If you go through that team, and if we count like the household names that we'd recognise, I'm just looking at it now. You've got Gordon, good player, Smith, Popescu, who's sort of relatively known, Halkett, Kingsley. You're going through and you're going, oh, these are quality players. You've got Naismith, Mackay Stephen, Boyce ahead of them. You're then looking at Andy Halliday, just like you're beginning to see a couple of them don't fit that mold of players that you're like, this is an excellent player that's going to win us the league. Because you've got players who win the league with you, but you've got players who will win you the league as well. And Andy Halliday seems to me a guy who you could almost replace him with any other centre midfielder, because he's got 10 good players around him and he does a decent enough job. He's not going to be a liability, but neither is he going to go and do anything spectacular with it. So for me, it's almost a concerning position that they keep. I say they keep. They're getting themselves into this little rut here, Hearts. And it seems to coincide with Andy Irvine dropping out the team and a change of who's actually playing as that three, because it seems to be Mackay Stephen and Naismith in another combination. So I just worry consistency wise in terms of who's playing and who's playing where, that they might not get over the line. But I don't know, has Andy Irvine been injured, or is he just not favoured, do you think?
No, it seems to have been, just taken out the picture for the last couple of games. Just off the back of him being praised for his form, really. I don't know if it's tactical stubbornness from Nielsen. Again, there's a bit of discontent amongst the Hearts fans, I sense. I can understand that, you know, they're 12 points clear at the top of the table, yet the standards of that club are so high that, you know, Craig Gordon came out and said himself that, you know, he's getting a bit sick of everybody saying that Hearts should be, you know, Hearts should be bossing the league, I think, basically.
Aye, but from that, I've got no sympathy for Craig Gordon, because he's playing for a team that should win the league almost at a canter. And Hearts have got that reputation, and everyone in the media builds them up to say, oh, that team will easily be playing in the top six next season. And they did win it, strolled it the last time they were down in the Championship. But you can't have it both ways. You can't be trying to court the media when you're saying, oh, you know, we're too big to go down. We're an amazing team last season and we don't deserve to be relegated because X, Y, Z, and the whole COVID-19 situation's been a bit of a rammy. But you kind of then come out and say, oh, the media's getting on our back because they're saying we're too good and we deserve to win. So I appreciate Gordon wasn't there for both seasons, but it seems around the club that I don't know what story they're trying to put out. Are they trying to say, we're a massive club and we deserve to be in the top six? Because if you are, you have to then take the pressure and the expectations of being a team that should win the Championship. Because you're saying not only should we win the Championship, we should be competing for European spots. Or are you trying to say, oh, you know what, we're you know, just try and play down expectations, because actually we're in a transition period or whatever their excuses are going to be. So, so I appreciate where he's coming from, Gordon, but I've also got very little sympathy because he's playing for Hearts.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right as well. And to me as well, there was a he's coming out and saying that, but in his incident with Carson, there was a sense of entitlement from Gordon as well. When Carson's, to me, has quite honestly just jumped for a 50-50 with the keeper. Mm. And Gordon knows how, you know, everybody knows how protected keepers are in those situations. So he's always going to get that. Yeah, he's up in Carson's face, you know, giving him abuse when almost like, who are you to touch me? Do you know what I mean? So, you know, there's that air of, you know, I agree with you. He can't have it both ways. And I've got no sympathy for him either when they're showing that kind of like air of almost arrogance at the same time. So I don't know what he wants people to say.
Yeah, what's best outcome? I don't know what's pointless from that statement. What's a win for him there? But I think acting like that on the pitch, you're hoping it maybe inspires some of the other players to say, oh, Craig Gordon's fighting, so I need to channel a wee bit of that myself. But also for those players that are looking at him fighting, you're playing for Hearts as well. Like,
yeah.
And they hardly needs to put a mark on it, because he's come from Rangers where he was loved by fans because he waved the megaphone around and did some right tough tackles. So translate that into Hearts. Bring the training and the experience you've had at Rangers and go for another team that are fighting to be the best team or one of the best teams.
But I have to admit, I'm quite happy with what happened because I think I've got a full house in my predictions.
I was just going to mention that to you, that it did kick off your 5 out of 5.
Oh, well, you can mention it, because I was just going to mention it as well, actually.
No, I'll let us see the inner workings, because we were trying to work out the odds you would have got on that. But what jinx did you for you this 5 out of 5 week?
5 out of 5 of my predictions. Did I put them in a coupon? No, of course I didn't.
Why would you?
But don't ask me why. But I predicted a draw. I thought it'd be a tough time for Hearts. Just the way the last few games have gone for them, and I don't know how you see. I don't know how you see both teams doing next week. This Saturday's coming. Sorry, we're Inverness at Alloa. And Hearts at home to Dundee, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm. Aye, it's an odd one, because I've backed Dundee last week as well, because I keep thinking, it's time. They're going to do something and you need to start pulling it together. And I backed Hearts as well, because exactly the same reasons. It's time, you need to start pulling it together. So that, I think, is going to be a big game. Hopefully a meeting number with teams accepting and realising actually that there's plenty to play for and there's plenty on the line. What you don't want to see there is two teams who don't really recognise the importance of it, because I think it's almost a season definer, because you go into the season and you can tell that Hearts are going to have pinpointed Dundee as being their biggest contenders. So they've had plenty of meetings beforehand that have been brought up time and time again with the players. Dundee will be the team to push us. Similarly, Dundee have been told Hearts will be the team to push us, because they both have that air of, like we just said, they should be sort of playing their trade in the division above. So I think it's a definer for both of them. If Hearts win, that could be it. They'll just carry on. If Dundee win, then that'll be them progressing up the table, because they've shown what they can do. Worst case for both of them, that's not true. I was going to say worst case for both of them is a draw, but I think a draw is a bad outcome. Like, I don't think either of them can afford a draw is probably what I'm trying to
say. Yeah.
Neither of them can afford a loss, obviously, but neither of them will be happy with that draw. But I think the draw's the most likely outcome, which is a roundabout way of me saying it's probably going to be a terrible, terrible game and it'll be a draw.
I think that is the way it's heading. That's the most logical prediction for me, is a draw. And I've come to the conclusion now that Dundee are just backing McPaik until they see if he can get them up through the playoffs, because all due respect to him, he seems to have, we've seen Mark Kerr getting the sack there for a wee bad run with Ayr. McPaik seems to just get away with these really, in Dundee terms, really, really poor results. He seems to just keep surviving them by the skin of his teeth. And I wonder now, because they're in fourth place, because they've got a couple of games in hand on Hearts, are they just going to roll with him until they see if he can get them up through the playoffs? Because if he loses at Hearts, Form Queen of the South are on. You know, there's teams around them that are more than ready to leapfrog them. So if Dundee lose, you know, is he going to survive this again and go again? Possibly, but I'm with you. Anyway, I'm going to predict a draw for that because I just don't see either of those two teams prepared to kind of take it by the balls.
No, and in my little cold robot heart, I hope it's a cracking game and there's goals and there's amazing play everywhere. But I'm just not sure I see it. And I think they almost cancel each other out because that's Cummins coming on a game now, scoring a couple of goals more. But for every Cummins, you've got a Boyce on the other side. For every Charlie Adam, there's an Andy Halliday. I suppose mobility-wise, creativity-wise, not at all. Mm-hmm. But seem to match themselves. And it seems like it will be a wee bit nipped up. So, yeah, I hope there's goals. I hope there's a game there. But, you know, we'll see how she goes. But I feel, yeah, a draw for me is most likely to be the outcome. Aloha Inverness, I think, is going to be an Inverness a win there. I don't know if I'd call it a stroll for Inverness, but I think just on the way they're going just now, I think McCann's had a relatively positive impact in terms of what he can do with the limited time he's had. Mixed results since he's been in and about. They've played recently. It was a draw there as well up at Inverness, but I think Inverness are looking a wee bit stronger now. They're getting that momentum in terms of getting the games coming, so they'll not be thinking too much about what's coming up. They'll just want to go out and play. So again, it's one of those ones where I think based on our form predictions, based on how they're actually going, I think Inverness will win, but I will make a good account for themselves because it's maybe too early to write them off completely, but when you look at their points versus games played, I think they pretty much are down. You wouldn't want to write them off, obviously, but I think we pretty much are going to. But yeah, that'll be an Inverness win for me.
I think I might go Aloha in because they've started to, I mean, of recent, they got that good point against Arbroath. They got the win against Queen of the South. And then in the last two most recent games, I think I wonder if they've gone 1-0 up in both of them. They lost 2-1 away at Dunfermline. And then they've obviously lost 3-1 at Raith. And they were definitely 1-0 up in Raith at the weekend. And I just think they probably are going down, but they're not going down without a fight. And I think this will be Inverness's third game this week after a long spell out. McCann's changed it a wee bit again against Dundee the other night. Mm-hmm. Where they lost, that was Dundee's classic bounce back after a poor result that I was talking about. It looks like he went back to a 4-4-2 with Sutherland and Story through the middle, and Keatings and Mackay wide, but could be wrong on that. It's probably more likely Story wide and Keatings and Sutherland through the middle. I don't know, but it looked anyway like a 4-4-2 against Dundee. So I think Inverness. I think he has stepped in quite seamlessly to Robertson because are these two results John Robertson could have easily had 1-1 draw against Hearts, 2-1 loss to Dundee, definitely. So I'm not predicting a disaster and a close one, as you say, but I wonder just Aloha might just have enough, such as this league, and they are, like I say, they are toiling Aloha, but they're throwing punches. And I think yeah, I don't see why not. I think they could, in their home patch, I think they could nick it against Inverness. So it's a bit of a if and but prediction, but I'm going to go for it.
I back you because they've played played Inverness on the 23rd of February. That came in, that was match day, or should have been match day 14, but obviously came between match day 17 and 18. And that was one of the games that went one up in. Innes Cameron had scored, Alan Trouton had scored. And I think you're right to highlight the potential danger of Aloha, because Innes Cameron's been a signing that's come in and has been a bit of a danger man there. So
yeah,
I think it'll depend how that back four of Inverness are feeling, if they're feeling up for a bit of a challenge. You've said maybe before against, was it Ayr you went to see Ayr Inverness, that they maybe toiled a wee bit, those, was it Divine and Dees that played
central? I thought they were fine. I thought they were good. The back quite tight. I thought Divine outshone Robbie Dees a wee bit in terms of, like, he was just chucking limbs in front of everything. I think they were all right. But I think they do have, yeah, they can make mistakes. They do have weaknesses, and they are, you know, they're conceding goals as well in Inverness. At the moment, so I've just got a hunch that Alloa might put in another good performance. Cameron, as you said rightly, has come in and he's done a kind of Jack Hamilton for Arbroath, where he's they've been crying out for a striker, both teams, and, you know, really good bit of recruitment on both sides, quite similar players as well. So yeah, I just fancy it.
And the potential old manager against the potential new manager, David Hawken Derby, perhaps Morton against Ayr coming up. How are you seeing that one?
That's a tough one for me, because I don't know who'll have gone in it, who'll be taking the reins at Ayr.
Pass.
I don't know
how many of the staff had left.
We might have to look that up, but if it's backroom staff, you could see, coming in, keeping it tight, like McAlone did himself, by the way. Just step in, you know, keep it tight, keep it safe, steady the ship, and try and maybe just grind out a positive result. You know, anything for Ayr United right now, just to turn it around, restore a wee bit of confidence, especially away from home. They might just take a draw out of that game until they can get a new manager in and just crack on. But having said that,
do they take a draw there? Obviously not playing for it. Do you think they'd both walk away and say, "Aye, that's fair enough"?
Maybe more Ayr than Morton. I think Morton 2 points above them with having played the extra game. You know, if Ayr win that, they'll leapfrog Morton and drag Morton back into it. So, but I think, again, both teams, just the precarious position they're in, any points a bonus. And yeah, I mean, Ayr struggling to score, low in confidence, drew a blank at the last two home games against Inverness and Arbroath. So Morton, yeah, they're sticky, but they can string together. They can score goals as well at the moment, you know. Two at home to Dundee. That says it all. I think they'll win it, because Ayr are just, they're not gonna know where they are at the moment. I think they'll be a bit all over the place. So
I've just found that Ayr United are relying on Davy White, who's the head of their youth academy, from a quick Google. And he has called on the team to show who's up for a fight, which either means we're going to go with the same team that we have been recently and hope for the best, or I'm just going to ring the changes and hope for the best.
Yeah. And I didn't, not for want of trying, I'm not disrespecting them, but I didn't see massive signs of players being up for a fight against the Inverness. I just saw a bit of low confidence and devoid of ideas, really, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm gonna go for a Morton win, because they're the more form of the team, more on form of the team slightly. Three draws and two losses in the last five isn't exactly great form, but I think they showed enough promise against Dundee Morton at home that I think they should be able to take Ayr.
I'd almost like to reserve my prediction until closer to match day, because I did quite enjoy the Ayr goalkeeper, Sinisalo. I think he's been relatively decent for a team that are toiling, and I'm yet to see if he'll be out. I couldn't find much to see if he'll be out for this upcoming game as well. So yeah, with that in mind, and a team, an air sort of attack that I've not suggested being the strongest physically or technically, I suppose, all round. You know, there's some good players in there who shine in certain aspects, but I don't know if they're quite gelling together. I don't know how they'll fancy a Morton team that will like to mix it. I can almost, again, I don't want to predict another draw, but I could see this one just sort of petering out. Although you've almost swayed me with Morton's attacking prowess. Tell me why I should go Morton rather than the draw, Russ.
Well, just given the predicament they're in, that's more of my thinking. With Morton being off the back of that confidence-building draw against Dundee, which they only narrowly missed out on the win there. So, and I got 5 out of 5 last week, if I haven't mentioned it already. So if I were you, I'd be,
you've given,
I'd be hanging on the coattails of my tips.
An impassioned sell for Morton, but yeah, I'll do it. I'll get on your back, so to speak. I'll go Morton for that one as well. Who are we to round up on here?
Queen of the South are at Arbroath. I was fortunate enough to be at Palmerston to watch Queen of the South beat Dunfermline, and after the first 15 minutes, I couldn't see that result happening because Queen of the South just could not get out the blocks. I think the possession, if I was going to guess it would have been about 90-10 to Dunfermline in the first 15 minutes because Gregory Buchanan was raging, you know, trying to G the team up, say, we haven't started yet. It was all Dunfermline, just Kieran McEnroy just pinging diagonals around, just knocking it about, trying to create some chances, and they got the penalty. And for me, I'm wondering, is that Queen of the South season to a T at the moment? Have they rode a bit of luck? You know what I mean? Because Dunfermline got the penalty, and Rowan Ferguson's done a great save. Although I think it was when Declan McManus looks back at that, he'll realise it was a bit of a poor penalty. He's tried to open his body up and put it in the far corner, but it's one of those kind of scuffs that's gone a bit more central. But so, like I say, you could not see Queen of the South winning it. They looked a bit toothless with what's his name up front, Naya Joseph. That's right. Sorry. A lot of long balls up to him that he was trying to reach them, and they were just going over the top. It was only the person who got a grip of the game for Queen of the South really was the man of the moment, Willie Gibson. Mm-hmm. And it was him that kind of, his determination that put the first real chance together, and with him and Buchanan kind of like orchestrating from the back, if you will, they really turned the screw. And I think they play such a, they're so organised off the ball, Queen of the South. I think they were quite happy to soak up a bit of Dunfermline pressure and just wait for their moment, because it was interesting to see, because they didn't look like doing anything for a lot of that first half. And then it's just through endeavour and a bit of individual brilliance from Willie Gibson that they got the goal to go ahead, and then were able to like resort back to like a bank of four, Obalai, and then another bank of four with that lone striker, and just, you know, side to side, as Dunfermline knocked it side to side, you know, they were passing players on, moving over as a unit. So, well, suddenly a really sort of really good outfit Johnson's got going there. So I kind of like them going to Arbroath. Sorry, I'm going on here, James, but
I was going to ask you though about Queen of the South, and maybe a wee bit of a nerdy manner, is we spoke in a wee bit about the signing of Breen coming in and playing centre half with Buchanan. So Obalai then moved up to, like you said, to sit in front of them a wee bit more. So you've got that little triangle. But it almost coincides with Willie Gibson taking more of an attacking role, or certainly getting more goals, or getting himself further up the pitch. Is that because they can then rely on, say, the fullbacks going up, but they're not relying on just two centre halves sitting? Did they drop into like almost a three, if you will, where Obelai sat in, or were they just attacking because they felt more confident? Did they have that more defensive solidity? I think.
You're absolutely bang on from what I saw. Obelai would drop into that back line to make a three, and yeah, Willie Gibson would crack on. Maxwell up the left to an extent, but yeah, certainly Gibson. And you could see Obelai just taking a step back into that defence as well, set pieces and defending goal kicks and things like that. So that was definitely part of the game plan, and allowed, what an engine Gibson's got for 37. And Maxwell too, it's funny, when they were warming up, I hadn't really been aware of him too much, and I just thought, like, who's this young? This is just a young boy, and he is. He's only 19, but I thought he looked a bit small. He looked a bit slight and a bit casual in the wee warm up, and he was having a wee laugh. And then I was like, who is this guy? This must be a young player that they've got in about the squad backup. And then suddenly he's starting. But what a really good shift he put in. You know, positionally really good, and quite, he seems quite relaxed as well, which for a young player, only 19 years old, didn't look nervous. Okay, if he gave the ball away, just back to it. So there's a lot more going for that Queen of the South team than, you know, I maybe thought at the start of the season. So going to Arbroath, I mean, you're talking about literally the first and second teams in the form league as well. So it's going to be a difficult one to call. I don't know what you think.
Basically, I agree. I've not obviously seen either of them, but I quite like Queen of the South. The way they're playing just now is reckless isn't the right word. It's almost fearless, where they don't seem to mind doing either side of the games. Like, they're winning, like they've come off the back of that game, 1-0, and obviously they've soaked up the pressure, like you said. They've presumably been seeing shots coming at them. They've been defending set pieces. They've been defending attacks well. So they seem relatively well-rounded. And that's a Queen of the South team without the players that we'd highlighted in terms of Shields and Dobie, who might be the ones to rescue them. Gibson's taken it up, but that sort of defensive shape now might be a more solid foundation on them. They've just brought in another loan signing from Rangers as well. So, you know, it remains to be seen how that Queen of the South team actually shapes up going forward. I'm more confident now. I had a spell at the start of the season where I was relatively confident they'd be okay, and then that's obviously fallen off with their form. But I'm more confident now that they will stay up. Arbroath, though, not really giving them much airtime today, but how much can we just say the same thing about the same sort of players? Jack Hamilton, excellent player. Bobby Lynn, excellent player. Ben Williamson, excellent player. Moore's come in, really wants to be playing well, and starting games and putting a stamp on things now. So he'll be quite keen to knock on some doors and say, look, get me playing, because I'll be able to drive us forward. Andy's not here to speak about that Arsenal Arbroath back four connection, but they're as solid as they can be. And I don't know, there's maybe not many people who'd be expecting to look at the table as it is just now and see the teams of Queen of the South and Arbroath sitting fifth and sixth. Bearing in mind, though, admittedly, that Inverness, Morton and Ayr sitting three spots behind them and have played either one or two games less. But, you know, they're not making a terrible account for themselves. I think I'm going to go Queen of the South on this one, only because they've shown they can do a bit of everything, and they've won their last three. So they've got that winning momentum. I think they've come off the back of that Dunfermline win, which has been a good one. Obviously, it's going to have been a bit of a sticky game. But yeah, I can see both teams doing relatively well. I can see goals coming in. But I think, yeah, Queen of the South, I think will have enough to defend it and enough just to go forward. I will be intrigued to see who starts in that Queen of the South team. In the more attacking positions, just based on the potential they've got versus the players who've been currently playing, if you can see what I mean in terms of form.
I think we've
not spoken about Arbroath much, but yeah, for me it's just same as always. Arbroath won't be a terrible result for them. Sorry, it won't be a terrible game for them, but I don't think it'll be the result thereafter.
I can see why you would back Queen of the South, because they seem to be able to turn it on home and away against anyone, really. You know, they've given Hearts a run for the money, beaten Dundee at Dens, so there's absolutely no reason why. It's, for me, it's a real flip of the coin job. And if Arbroath do win, it's probably likely to be a ground out 1-0 kind of game, 2-1 maybe, as you say, where they make it really, really difficult for Queen of the South and play their strengths. But I think you made a really good point that Queen of the South have really risen to the injury problems they've had to key players like Joe McKee, Dobie, Connor Shields especially, but they've still managed to pull out these results. So probably why I'm going to side with you and think Queen of the South might just do it.
I would have fancied the draw, but I can't have backed two or potentially three draws. Morton Ayrshire was almost a draw, so I can't, although that would have been some coupon as well if I'd put on four draws this weekend. If we do want to sort of justify ourselves a wee bit more, looking at the table just now, Queen of the South have won or picked up their points by winning 7 and drawing 3. Arbroath have points by winning 5 and drawing 6. So
I was going to say Queen of the South are not a very drawsy team. They either go for it or get beat. Do you know what I mean? So I'm with you on that one.
Same amount of goals as Dunfermline, no kick in the arse off Dundee. They're score goals, but at the same time, second highest goals against.
Yeah.
So that's just, it's all or nothing for them, eh?
Says it all, doesn't it? Yeah.
Dunfermline Wraith off as well. That's the only other news really for the Championship, isn't it?
Aye, seems to be a COVID case in the Dunfermline ranks. So they're just doing what they have to do. I think it's been rapidly rearranged already though, to next midweek, I think. Wraith back to winning ways at the weekend there against Thalwa. Looked in doubt a wee bit. I think they were even one down at half time, but just that firepower they've got, managed to turn it around. And I think we've heard tonight that they're actually adding to that yet again. Is it James Keatings that's rumoured to be on his way there?
An interesting turn of events for the Championship.
Yeah. I mean, they're already so top heavy, Wraith.
I don't understand that. Well, I understand the signing, but I'm speechless, really.
Yeah.
Why is that happening?
I know. I mean, is there a bottomless pit of money as well in Kirkcaldy? it'd be a good club to play for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Play a good style, as I've bored people to death with, probably. But any doubts of them dipping away? I mean, their form is sketchy. It's like win, lose, win at the moment. I think they're obviously doing enough to stay up there. And the key thing is they've got a game in hand on Dunfermline, who they're level with at the moment. So I think they could easily be the best of the rest this season if they keep that up, because Dunfermline drawing another blank, Queen of the South, I mean, it sums them up really, because they're capable of creating chances, but they're really struggling suddenly to put them away.
If you're looking for a team to get attacking players, you'd expect Dunfermline to be scraping about the bottom of that barrel. But
definitely, yeah.
I'm partially annoyed that it's off, because it's a good Friday night bit of entertainment. Good money for both clubs as well, but I think it's been an all right advert, these Friday night games for the Championship. And I went looking to try and see if I could even listen to Inverness, Alloa, I think it was, during the week. No sign of it. I think Dundee game last week, no sign of it. There's an hour sports sound where they talk about, I don't know, just the news of the day, and then that's it. It's like, oh, by the way, 7:45, we've got a championship game, so you need to get the score off that some other way. It just seems to me like it's disappointing that there's not more games to access.
Yeah, it's a shame they can't be a wee bit more flexible and stick these midweek games on, when, especially if there's been cancellation on the Friday as well. Yeah, I think that's been a real bonus to have these games this season on the Friday nights. It's a nice wee taster for the weekend action, especially when you can't all get to games. You know what I mean?
Aye, not want to put on the coupon though, because you don't want to do the Friday Saturday doubleheader.
You don't want it burst before.
That's the Saturday Sunday one you've got to watch out for, but Friday Saturday is poor as well.
Yeah.
That, to be fair, it might be one of the only positives that's come out of this pandemic, is the increase in telly and also the increase on being able to see it on a Friday night. Because I've gone to a few Friday night games just as a fan.
Mm.
But it's good to be able to sit at home and watch Dunfermline Wraith as a neutral, in which I've got no horse in the race. So.
Yeah, definitely.
So that'd be a loss, but I'm sure I'll find some other way to entertain myself. I think that sums us up this week. I don't think there's any other news or any other big fixtures or not.
Yeah, just to sum up, I've backed Alloa, I've backed Queen of the South, Hearts Dundee draw, and Green at Morton. And yourself?
Let me read the fixtures again, because I just say things and hope for the best. Did I pick someone? Yeah, I did. Inverness, Queen of the South, draw, Morton.
Aye, so it's the Alloa Inverness one that's going to be the potential decider there. So,
and again, I've gone two away teams, a draw and a home team. So don't get your money on that unless you're wanting good odds and to lose your money in the first place. But I think that sums us up, the championship, I suppose, preview, review, and also just some general lower league musings. Hopefully we'll be back, or we will be back next week, but hopefully we'll be back next week to talk to you about the return of League One and League Two. Who knows, we could be sitting preparing for a weekend of League One and League Two football at this rate. Other news of note, like I said at the start, we've got the Blair Alston interview coming up today as well. Episode's always weekly, 12 noon on a Thursday. Get our back catalogue on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, through the podcast app, just by looking for Through the Turnstiles. You can get us on YouTube, again, Through the Turnstiles podcast. You'll find us there. You can get us on Twitter if you want to shout at us for getting something terribly wrong, or praise Muzz for getting 5 out of 5, something that is unlikely to be seen again. Sort of have to say. Yeah, thanks very much for listening.